You're listening to WCOM FM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your community radio station. The comments, views, and opinions of this program do not necessarily represent the views of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Today's program is brought to you by Focus Resources. Their website is focusresourcesinc.com. And yes, that is my business. And I'm proud of that business. And we're working in that business with clients on projects with diversity embedded in the innovations that we're doing and the changing the business models and how we're staffing the companies and how we're looking at the communities we serve. And so when it comes to diversity, diversity does impact the bottom line. It impacts how successful a business is, more so now than ever, I think, in this country, because the conversation is about diversity and inclusion and developing a level playing field, having that equity in the business that everyone has an opportunity to be part of the organization and to feel that they belong in that. So they bring their unique perspective, their understanding of their communities, their backgrounds, the people they are connected to. And that enables businesses to innovate. It enables us to innovate our business models. It enables us to reach different customer bases and create new products, services, and yes, technology that marketplace, that our customers, our team, our investors and our business leaders need at home and in the business. And so there is a very much a positive relationship between management of diversity and in innovation. And it's been proven to be statistically significant when it's been studied. Now, innovation isn't limited to a single type of diversity. It's not about men or women. It's not about a particular age group on different ethnic backgrounds, religious beliefs, but it's about all of those people that we recruit into our organizations, bringing their unique and authentic self and their perspective in, and having the freedom and the confidence to voice who they are and their view and what we're doing. And it has an impact on innovation, especially in complex companies. So when we have multiple lines of products and services, if we're in different industries or industry segments, different geographic areas, and the larger our companies become, the more of an impact a true diversity, inclusion, equity, and belonging platform in our organization, the better it is at enabling us to serve more people with better products and better services. Now, innovation isn't about doing something just a little bit better. It's about doing something completely different. It's about being a disruptor. It's about taking things to the next level and taking things where no one even thought we needed to go. We can look at companies like Google. Google became a verb for us. We're going to Google it. But Google brought us something that 20 years ago, we didn't even know we needed on a daily basis. Amazon and their innovation in delivery and fulfillment and bringing products and multiple vendors and suppliers into a platform to sell their products and distribute their products. Apple, Dell, the iPhone. We can look Tesla with cars and we can look at so many different innovative companies and look to see, is that driven by one person who has an idea and they go out and recruit others that can make that happen? And when they're recruiting others, are they looking for people just like them or people who are going to challenge them and bring novel ideas and different perspectives to the table? And so when we're looking for innovation catalysts in our R&D, in our business models and how we do things and how we market and how we reach out to the different generations that may be wanting to, we may want to use our products and our services and our technology, then we're not looking at a flat picture of diversity, but we're looking to have a three-dimensional picture of diversity in our organizations. So what we want to do in our diversity initiatives to bring innovation into our businesses is that we want to look at diversity from our ability to innovate. And innovation requires, again, everyone to be able to come in with their perspectives and their views and have a voice. Doesn't mean their voice is going to win. It means generally that their voice is going to bring some insight and something to the table that will enable us to put together all those different perspectives to create something. So diversity and innovation really move together, and the more diverse our organizations are, and that is a unified diversity. So from that standpoint of, it's not one group fighting against another, but it's everybody coming together to create a company, an organization, a team, a perspective that blends and harmonizes those different voices so that we can be the best we can as a united team in our organizations. So whether that's innovations of products or services, it's innovation of our business model, it's innovation of our marketing and our advertising, our messaging. We're looking for positive relations to exist within our organization from people of diverse backgrounds. And the magnitude of how we can harness that and create an optimal mix of those different voices and putting them in the right roles, the right places, can really have a tremendous impact on what we're doing. But it can be challenging, you know, working on different projects right now, bringing people that have different backgrounds in. But when you have someone in the organization that says, well, I'm not changing and I'm not listening to other ideas and everybody's just going to have to adapt around me and it's got to be my way or the highway, well, then you need to take them and let them get on the highway and let them move on. Because the complexity of our organizations, the more innovative we want to be in what we're doing, means that we cannot have people in the organization that are, one of the organizations I used to work for, the new CEO and chairman of the board came in and referred to a substantial part of the management in the organization as an impervious layer of clay. And in our organizations, when we're running into those people who will not change, or those people who create an obstacle for information and ideas to flow from one level of the organization to another or across projects, you know the type I'm talking about. It's like they're not on board with it, and that passive aggressive behavior will be there, that they can actually tear apart your organization and stop not just innovation, but can stop the conversations and create a roadblock to true diversity and inclusion and allowing people to be their authentic self. So everyone in the organization comes in diversity, in inclusion, with a level playing field, that equity, and needs to develop a sense of belonging and needs to develop the confidence to bring in an idea and have that idea captured, examined, validated from the standpoint of, it's a valid for you to have that idea. And then let's see how this is going to work. Is it going to work in the organization? And so we're just starting to understand the complexities of working in an environment where different generations, as many as five different generations, if we think about baby boomers like myself, are still working. The greatest generation, some of those are still in our organizations as investors, as senior leadership, as board members, as advisors and consultants. We have Generation X, Generation Y, we have the Millennials, we have Generation, I think, Z, and I'm not even sure what all the generations are that are in there, and we're about to add another one. As our lives get longer, as our productive years get longer, as people choose to work for longer parts of their lives or have multiple careers, we're dealing with the dynamics of different age groups, of different experiences being raised, different experiences of people immigrating into the countries, people living overseas, coming back with different ideas. And so we have such a dynamic opportunity right now to experience diversity that's more than skin deep, that's more than just looking at an ethnic group or a gender or a lifestyle and different choices and say, we want to understand and incorporate these perspectives in our organization. So that leads us to needing to have a work environment that has factors that are going to amplify the success of leveraging diversity, inclusion, equity, and belonging in the organizations into to our organizations being able to innovate by leveraging those and embracing those differences. And so that takes participative leadership behavior. And that's when we're genuinely going to listen to everyone around the table and employees' suggestions. And we want to hear them. We want them to be submitted. We want to have a system for them to have those conversations. And that's going to enable us to allow diversity to multiply its benefits in our organization. And so I've seen organizations where they have roundtables, and it's a different, you know, the CEO, the leadership team sets around a lunch table, takes people to lunch, or has a small group come in and have a discussion. A smaller organization, the chief executive or some other member of leadership or all the different members of leadership may choose to take two or three people to lunch or out to dinner or to a breakfast or sit down over coffee at the workplace to have the conversations about what they're seeing in the organization and take the pulse of the organization. It's not about watching or spying or trying to catch someone doing something wrong in the organization. This is about trying to catch people doing things right and people who have ideas on how to do things differently. And we're looking for active participation in the organization at all levels of the organization so that we're getting, as leadership, we're getting rooted and grounded inside our organization and have open doors, open flows of communication that can nudge us into taking a different perspective, that can help us see different views. And it's more than a poster on the wall. It's more than just spending the time. It is us as leaders actively listening and actively encouraging people to have ownership and buy in and want to make the organization better. And so it is also about what something, I think it's labeled cognitive diversity, meaning that people see things differently. And if they're free to speak their mind, they're going to share that. And cognitive diversity leads to people being able to have a free exchange of ideas and constructive conflict, a constructive discussion. Think of it as being on a debate stage, if anyone was ever in debate, and you have a topic and one side takes one view and one side takes the other, and you challenge each other's ideas and debate it, and you're pointing out the different things. I see this in talking to some of the law students I talk with, and they talk about presenting their side of the case, and they have to accept that certain facts are true, and then they're making a case and they're taking one perspective and they're going to argue that case. And that's what we're looking for in our organizations is open discussion, open ideas, and being able to encourage even the opposing view. That constructive conflict enables us to discuss among peers, between employees, up the management ladder and down the management ladder, to see what we can understand about the organization, about the opportunities that are being seen out there, and what the obstacles we may be building into our organization when it comes to our culture and how we have embedded certain things in the organization. And the older the organization it is, we'll likely have more challenges to embracing something like cognitive diversity and having input. Now, to the extent that an organization has input, it doesn't mean that we're taking that a business is a democracy or a democratic republic. It means that management, the owners, the leadership are asking for this information in, and based on all the information that comes in with their leadership skills, their experience, their understanding of the organization as a whole, they're going to take that in, they're going to incorporate what they can, and they're going to discard the things that don't work. And so it is all this information coming in, these opinions, these perspectives, and it's up to management to be a strong leaders to take the best of what comes in and use it to the best ability to make the organization grow and be innovative. But it doesn't mean that everyone's idea, everyone's perspective is going to equally work in the organization when it comes to innovation. And a lot of times in innovation, we do a lot of trials, a lot of discussions. We try to kill as many ideas as we can, because the faster we kill them, the faster we can move on to something that's actually going to work. And so the organization also needs to understand that while we're encouraging their input, their openness, their challenges, the way things have always been thought of, the way things have always been done, everything's not going to change because there's priorities, there's strategic priorities, there's a limit on budget. There are things that we're constrained naturally from doing. And sometimes things take a while to change. And that's a perspective we have to share in encouraging this cognitive diversity in these discussions and people sharing their information and their perspectives on what's going on. So we want to encourage a culture of innovation, a culture of cognitive diversity of debate, but it's civil debate. It's allowing everyone to understand that everyone's perspective may not be equally understood. It may not be equally feasible. It may not work in the industry and the approach for a lot of reasons, but you're entitled to bring that to there. We want to hear it, and we want to take something positive from it. And so we're not looking to tear into each other on a personality level or a style or a communication style level or even a word choice level. We want to look to what that person is bringing to the table in a positive manner and frame it out that way. And it needs to be framed in our strategic priorities. Diversity is a top issue, a top opportunity in organizations today. And we need to keep that embedded in as a strategic objective in there. And by encouraging diversity of perspective, of sharing that, of getting inputs from different levels of the organization, and finding mechanisms to actually validate people's ideas and their ability to share them and accept them as something to be considered, that's important. It's not a pat on the head. It's not, yes, drop it in the box, and they feel like that box is file 13 and no one ever looks at it. It's just another exercise. It's just the latest, you know, flavor of the month, the newest fad, the newest trend. It's not going to last. It's not sincere. That's what we don't want happening in our organization. And so we need to examine our communication styles, our interpersonal, our mechanisms for communicating, and how people interact. And so we need to facilitate civil dialogue of people with different backgrounds within our organization. The more you can discuss, the more you can have fun and enjoy those open and free discussions of ideas and perspectives, that creative spark of bouncing ideas back and forth and of that approach of, okay, put it on the table, we want to hear it, okay, and no, we're going to try to kill your idea. If it's not feasible, if it's not going to work, we're going to first try to punch as many holes in your idea and your concept. And we want you to be strong enough to defend it and bolster your idea. We want you to be fully thinking it out and have it not just a spark or not just a concept, but we want it to be able to be fully fleshed out. We want it to be a straw man. We want it to grow beyond that. We want to put some muscle on the idea before we're going to make an investment in it. So creative sparking of ideas through discussions, through discourse, through sharing of experiences of different educational work and national backgrounds enables us to pull different expertise, different functional areas, experiences, all of that into this discussion. And it's really amazing that when we look at the influence of people having the confidence to come in and say what's on their mind and to disagree, to say, you know, boss, sorry, that's just not going to work. And this is why I'm sitting here in the desk and I'm the one who uses that software. And this is what the software does. And this is what the software doesn't. Now, we might be able to find another solution, or maybe we can code something around it. Maybe we need another app or something that interfaces with it to do that. But what I really think is, based on where I'm sitting in the organization, this seems to be what we're driving at. This is what we seem to need because of these environmental conditions. And so that's what we're looking for. We're looking for organizations that are dynamic, that are growing, that are constantly looking to embrace new ideas, new ways of doing things, new ways of looking at the things that we've always been doing. And maybe that's means formal initiatives. Maybe that means formal sit downs and suggestions and analysis of ideas. And maybe it's just the freedom of someone to come in from their cubicle to their boss's office and say, hey, been sitting here working on this for the past 3 months or 6 months or 10 years or whatever. We've changed software. We've done these things, but we've not really changed how we are doing things. We've changed the tools, but not the what, not the how, and not the why. And so that's what we're looking for in our organizations. We're looking for our organizations to show us the way into new types of marketplace solutions, not just products and services, not just one-offs, but really innovative ways to do something differently. And that means we have to be willing to analyze what we're doing right now. We're going to analyze the status quo. We're going to look at our goals. We're going to look at our organizations. And we're going to say, where do we stand on the in terms of diversity? Where do we stand in terms of including everyone in the conversation? Everyone having an equal opportunity based on skill sets, based on hard work to advance to different levels. And how does everyone feel in the organization? Do they feel like they belong, or do they feel like a square peg in a round hole? Or do they feel like, you know, they're the only orange in a barrel of apples? We need to be aware of that, and we need to look at those dimensions for innovation, for diversity, and for our ability in our organization to enable innovation and diversity in our organization to work for us. So we may look around and think, we've been doing the same thing for the past 30 years. We might have changed the color. We might have changed the packaging. And yes, while our product is, you know, giving us decent return, what happens next year? What happens later? Or maybe we've come through COVID and we're realizing we have a lot of issues with how we've always things have been done. And we need to figure out how to get our organization growing again and innovating again and retooled and redesigned to move ahead. And so having the ability to analyze where we are and then understand what it's going to take to change our organization means that we have to dig in and we have to be really honest and we have to ask our team what they see, what their ideas are. You know, as a consultant, I go into organizations, and when I was inside larger organizations, we would have consultants came in. The really good consultants were the ones that had the listening skills and allowed people to talk about their jobs, their roles, what was working and what wasn't working. And they found, and I find this in my working with clients, is that a lot of times the true problem can be readily identified in an organization if we're just listening to the people who are working in the organization. If your revenues aren't growing, why? If your products are not selling, you're feeling price pressures, why? Costs are rising in the organization and prices are stable. What's going on? Again, last year, 2020, we learned a lot about our organizations and about what they were really equipped to do. So the company needs to look at its work environment, the conditions, the marketplace, the products, the competition, and look at our organization and how we make decisions and what information we take in. And we also need to be aware of what signals we're sending when someone comes in with an idea and we don't take the time to hear it. And it may be not a great time right then when you're putting out some kind of fire to do it, but it is the time when someone comes in and says, I have an idea. And, you know, you take a breath and say, I'm so glad you came in to give me that idea. I do want to hear it. Right now I'm putting out this fire and I want you to remind me of this, and let's set a date and time to get together when I can give you my full attention to hear your idea. Now, if you have a fire extinguisher right now for this fire, tell me that right now, because I really need something done with this fire right now. But if it's not the fire extinguisher, the tool I need for this, can we do it tomorrow or the next day? And stick to keeping that commitment that you're making, because you can send a message to somebody and say, oh, they just put me off. They didn't really want to hear it. You have to be authentic. You have to want to hear it at a time and a place that works. And so you want to give them your undivided attention. And if it's not your attention, because the fire is going to be going on for 2 weeks and you still want the information and there's a reason for that they're coming to you right then to share that information, then delegate it to someone who can give it the attention, who can listen, who can genuinely want to hear what the employee is saying or your other team member. What may not be an employee, it may be a consultant, it may be a contractor, maybe one of your board members, it may be a customer. But you have to genuinely and authentically want to hear them and hear that and set up those conditions. Because if you aren't inclusive enough in your decision-making process, if you're not inclusive enough in how you communicate, and that people's opinions count, you're sending a message that they don't count. And that's not what you want to do to your organization or to your customers. So we're going to look at our status quo, and then we're going to look at that target. We're going to set our goals, and we're going to define what's happening in our markets with our competition. We're going to see whether we're ahead, we're behind, you know, we're in the middle of the pack. Where do we want to go? And we want to look inside the organization first, and that's what we do with the status quo. We're going to look outward to see what everybody else is doing. Are the same factors impacting them? Or do we see a competitor that's outperforming us and we don't know why? And then we start trying to gather information about that. It may be looking at their website. It may be looking at their advertising. What are they doing to outpace us? And we've got to figure it out, because it's a benefit to us to know what everyone else is doing. And when our organizations are running behind, maybe we're just, you know, maybe we're second or third, and maybe that's fine. But if we're last place, we're somewhere in middle of the pack, we know our survival is threatened, because we're not where we need to be a strong competitor. And any downturn, like a COVID hit, can mean our business is not going to be around. And again, when we're looking externally to define our targets, and we're assessing that outward facing analysis that we're doing, when we're looking at what I was going, seeing what our organization knows about our competition, seeing what the marketplace is saying, really is important. And again, it gets down to our listening skills, active listening, active analysis, and looking for options for us to do the right things. And then we're getting back, and we've talked about it before, I call it a twos analysis or a SWOT analysis. When we're looking to target, to look to our strengths and our weaknesses, and turn those into opportunities. And so we're identifying those gaps and stepping in to say, what is going on in our organization? Are we diverse? Are we innovative? Are we set up with a culture that encourages conversations, discourse, discussions, and debate, and ideas flowing up and down the organization? Are we taking advantage of the opportunities that when we have a need to recruit new team members, that we're looking for the right skills, the right people, and to put them into the right roles? I see a lot of wonderful, talented people recruited into organizations that are then brought in and not put in a role, or not given the latitude, the delegation of authority to take those wonderful skills and talents that they were recruited for and actually use them in the business. And so we know where we are, we know where we want to go, we know we have gaps, and then we need that roadmap, that business plan, that plan of action that enables us to incorporate diversity and inclusion in these conversations, these active listening, into our everyday lives in our businesses, so that the organization has a chance to learn, has a chance to find a new context for bringing these new ideas in and encouraging innovation. And then, you know, it's going to take some trial and error. We're going to make mistakes in finding that path forward, but we're going to have to go with those growing pains. We need to transform our organizations and make it so that that ongoing learning, that self-assessment, that self-awareness, those listening skills, those conversations and debates are not one-off conversations, but become an institutionalized process for us that enables us to continue to focus on diversity-led innovation. The whole company needs to be engaged in that in order for us to succeed. I mean, when we look at the long-term success of businesses, it depends on our ability to capture and develop new ideas. And one of the biggest problems is that that role is frequently limited to a few people in the organization, and they're designated as the idea people, or this is R&D, or this is product development. And the reality is, in our organizations, we need everyone to be in sales. And how we view things, we're always selling our organization internally and externally, and we're always in innovation. We're always engaged in innovation and new ideas. And so when we can bring more people into that, we can demonstrate the ability to grow, the ability to adapt. We can teach each other the value of diversity, the value of an equal playing field, a level playing field for people to advance and share their information, and that feeling of inclusion, that belonging. And so we have to teach other that, and we have to be able to harness that in order for new innovations to come about that the marketplace are going to want to adopt, that they're going to value, and that they're going to buy. And so we need to empower our teams to participate. We need them to spot great opportunities and position our organizations to pursue those opportunities. And it's part of every leader's job. It's part of every manager's job. It's part of every person's job in the organization to encourage the culture of acceptance. And we want our leadership to be in a mode where we're going to embrace and accept people in the organization that we might not be fully comfortable with. And we're going to place a value on ideas and on people innovating, sharing opinions, and look to expand beyond just a defined formal role in the organization where we're looking at and putting all the pressure on a few people to innovate and to come up with the new ideas. Because the other challenge we have as businesses is that we frequently constrain our best and our brightest by the structures, the process, the defined roles, the traditional roles of authority, and the inability to give up control of the processes. We're working with, in one of my organizations right now, we're working with a lot of interns. And so the interesting thing is to see how giving an intern a task list, a project, and says, this is what you're going to drive home. These are your deliverables. How you get to these deliverables is up to you. You can do any number of approaches. But this is what we need. This is when we need it by a certain time. This is the goal. This is the outcome that we need. And this is how you're going to be measured. Now, we are here to answer questions. We're here to help you if you get stuck, if you need access or somebody that has more clout to get you in to talk to somebody. Whatever that is, we want to equip you and give you the tools for that, and we'll guide you in the process. And one intern I'm working with in particular impressed me in that she's taken two different paths, and we talked about that. She can use one piece of software or the other, and we wanted to see what it was going to look like. And the reality is one piece of software she's using makes something look really good. It's really readable, and it's a great format. But it's limited on things like sorting capability and be able to dig out the common factors, where the other piece of software enables us to sort things but doesn't look as pretty. And so what are we using it for? And it got me thinking about one of my projects back when I was at Ford and just getting started there, was that we had people who wanted things that were pretty, and we had people who wanted things that were practical, quick to use, and gave us a lot of information. And I can remember in one particular case, one of our managers got moved in, and we had been using a document. It was a spreadsheet probably for 14 months. It wasn't pretty. It was a hardworking tool that every week we updated, we brought it in, we shared it with upper management. It was down and dirty analysis. It was quick to do, and that's what it was, and it wasn't meant to be consumed externally. It was just for our leadership. And then the new manager came in, and I can't remember his name, but he came in, and he wanted me to spend pretty much days making this thing pretty, because he came out a part of the organization that was all about the pretty and the presentation, and the analysis was done before it ever got to them. And in that particular case, I was swamped trying to spend like $97 million to order equipment and stuff that had to be ordered in the same time frame, and there was one or the other, and I wasn't very polite. I'll be honest. I think one of my other supervisors said I was pretty terse with him, and I was, because at that point in time, pretty didn't matter. Pretty wasn't going to get it done. It wasn't going to meet the objectives of the organization. And quite frankly, for 14 months, we'd been using something that was a spreadsheet. You know, it had its grids, its rows, its lines, its cells. it didn't have pretty colors and special fonts and all those kind of things. It wasn't in PowerPoint, and back then it was Harvard Graphics. But it got the job done, which is all it was intended to do. Now, if I was sending something maybe to the board of directors, which the $97 million project had gone to the board of directors and was pretty, then I would have been concerned about that. But there's a time and a place for pretty. There's a time and a place for functional. And in our organizations, we have to understand when those times are occurring and the perspectives on that. Because, you know, you can have people spend all day making something pretty, and it lasts 5 minutes and has no real impact on your organization, except you consumed a lot of resources to make something pretty that had no practical application and did not have a significant impact on your organization. And so where does that come from? What does that mean? How do we deal with it? And understanding our culture and what false obstacles, false constraints we're putting on our organizations by having those perspectives, by not taking things into consideration. And that's really what we need to examine. And we have perpetuated systemic issues in organizations for decades, and some even for centuries, when you look at some of the companies around the world that have been around for centuries. And because they have not changed, because they are unwilling to change, they have issues today, and they look to their compatriots, their peers, to regulations, to the lawmakers that they solicit, I guess, lobby would be another word for that, to protect them from, in the marketplace, from actually being accountable and transparent to the population, to the citizens, to the communities, to the larger global community. And so when we are organizations and we start realizing that we are challenged in the marketplace and we are looking to someone else to protect the way we've always done something, then we need to wake up and realize that we need to change. We need to take a different perspective, and we need to step forward and make sure that we can change and that our organizations will survive, not because we're asking lawmakers to protect us with laws and defend us with laws that are quite frankly unfair, or to exempt us from laws that would make us do things better in the realm of diversity and other social impact type things. But we can't expect that, because the reality is that businesses will ultimately answer to the population, to the customer, to the communities in which they operate in. And those answers will not be brushed off for many companies, because if you're targeted for a boycott, if you're targeted for any kind of action, the consequences to your organization may be such that you can't recover from those missteps and those mistakes. And so when we're looking at the marketplace, when we're looking internally, and we're facing inward and we're facing outward to understand where we're standing in the terms of diversity and inclusion and innovation, if our business isn't innovative enough, can't see what's going in the marketplace, and we're constantly being surprised by products and services and technology that our competition is bringing to the marketplace, or that these initiatives and these innovations are coming in, it's not coming from our customers and our competition, but the ripple effects of a Google technology, of moving to websites, of needing to be on mobile devices and to do e-commerce, to look at cryptocurrency, all the different things that are coming into play in the marketplace and the economy and our environment are putting pressures on every business to examine themselves honestly and to do something differently, to have a different impact, to have a different way of understanding what has to happen in the organization, and to stop clinging to the way we've always done it and the systemic aspects of the way we've always done it, because we're comfortable with it. We don't want to be challenged. And as someone told me the other day, I am in my 60s and I'm not going to learn another thing, and you can't make me. That is true. I can't make you learn anything. I can't make you choose to have diversity and innovation in your organization. I can't change your mindset. But your business, your customers, the people you're working with and surrounding yourself will make you change, or they'll leave you behind. Employees that are obstinately against diversity, are against learning about changing the way they communicate, people who will say, Well, I don't do email. I'm not going to text. I don't care about a website. Social media, who cares? You know, that kind of stuff. Their organization's days are numbered unless they can bring in a diverse team that they'll listen to, that they'll delegate the authority and those actions to, and the value of their businesses are going to decline because they're going to be left behind by those attitudes and that resistance to diversity and inclusion, to hearing other people's perspectives. And so what we have to do, what we're looking to do in our organizations, is to thrive, to grow, to be able to be so successful that we can pay people more than minimum wage, that we can pay them a competitive wage, a living wage, that we can encourage them to get more education, whether that's a skilled trade, whether that's, you know, learning to program and do apps, whatever that is in the terms of what their dreams and their goals are. And the more successful our for-profit organizations are, the more tax dollars we pay and we put into education and infrastructure and giving back to the community, things that we can all share, green space, parks, you know, we can preserve areas. And the more profit we make, the more we can direct those profits into our causes that we believe. And it's whether that's our church, our community centers, whether that's conservation, animal rights, whatever it is that we're passionate about. When we run organizations that generate the revenues and the profits ethically from a perspective of serving the marketplace and doing it with integrity and listening to what the marketplace wants, that success magnifies our impact with the dollars, the returns that we make, to be able to do more for our employees, to be more engaged in our communities, and to give back and to grow and hire more people, paying them better job, you know, for better wages. There's so many things that we can do when we're successful and our organizations are thriving. But that success, that ability to innovate, to learn, to grow, to incorporate, to reach out, to do marketplaces, to have new products, new services, new technology, gets back to how good we are as business owners, as leaders, as learners. And learning is one of the things that as we get older is harder to do. And if you've never been a person who enjoyed reading and enjoyed learning things or watching videos and acquiring new skills, then step into that world. Pick one thing you're going to get better at. Pick one thing you want to learn more about. Maybe that's social media and you're going to have someone come in and teach you, just get you an understanding and a working knowledge of it so you can supervise it well, so you can understand what the impact is going to be in your business. Maybe you need someone to come in and work with you on your website and why it's important for websites to become more accessible to people with disabilities and challenges. Been working on logos and, you know, people like the frilly, flowing text and that kind of things, but frequently flowing text, cursive, the more elaborate fonts and things out there are hard for people to read. I had a card sent to me from my insurance company the other day, and it is white print on a pale green background. I couldn't even read it with a magnifying glass. So it was small white print on a pale green background. And I gave it to someone else to look at who was much younger and had much younger eyes than I did, and she couldn't read it. And so when we have to be aware of things of that nature when we're creating things that people are going to look at, that they're going to read, our websites, our marketing materials. If we're making videos and we're pointing out an image and someone's blind and they're watching that video, what does that do to them? Are you giving them an alternative of something that describes what the image is on the board? Are you leaving them hanging from that for that information? There's so much that we need to think about, we need to talk about. We need to walk in other people's shoes in our organizations and become more aware of that as we are here in 2021. It could be any year that we're in, but it's going to become more and more important as the world continues to grow more diverse, as we deal with more and more challenges, as technology has these leaps and innovations that are going to challenge us on how we're doing things. Just think, when my grandmother died in 2004, we weren't all carrying cell phones around. She would not have known what Google was and why websites were not something that everybody thought about. There were so many things that she had seen in her lifetime, going from walking to school to and to having a car, to airplanes, to men on the moon, to the space shuttle, to, you know, massive computers that started out with the big mainframes, to being able to hold a calculator in your hand. That speed of change in a lifetime is amplifying. It's almost exponential at this point. How many books are written every year? How many articles are published? How many new websites, new innovations, things people are trying? What works and what doesn't? What works and what doesn't is what connects with the marketplace, and it has to connect with the marketplace to an extent that we haven't had for generations, because there were smaller pockets. There were traditional ways of communication. You know, people waited weeks to get a newspaper out west, say like the New York newspapers. Then they were, you know, delivered via airplane. Now we're almost instantly connected to people around the world 24/7, 365. And when there's a disruption of our websites or communication or our cell phones, our businesses are impacted by that. And so we need to understand that the speed of innovation, the speed of technology, the speed of other people introducing new ideas and new concepts and new business models and new ways of doing things will make it more and more challenging for our organizations to exist, let alone thrive. So if your business is going to thrive, it's about learning, it's about listening, it's about diversity and inclusion, it's about creating equal playing fields, that equity of everyone that comes into the organization can work hard, can contribute, can be heard, and can have the opportunity to advance. Using the same metrics, the same key performance statistics, all of those kind of things to come in and make our businesses stronger, make our connections to our communities, to our potential customers, and our actual customers stronger. We have shared life experiences. We all know what it's like to get up on a Monday morning on a stormy day and not feel that great and not really want to go to work that day. And we know what it's like to have a Monday every day of the week. And we know now what it's like to feel isolated, where people, you know, we were connected. We went to work. We went to the gym. We went shopping. We went to the movies with friends. We had these social lives. And then COVID happened. And our worlds narrowed down to our homes and maybe our offices. If we were essential workers, we were still going to work. But we were dealing with shortages. We were dealing with the stress. We were dealing with the risks of exposures. Our world is different, and we're looking for more solutions. We're looking for people to do things differently, to hear us, to see us, to connect with us across the miles, across the airwaves. And those solutions people are looking for, I think, are very different than what they were before. We want to do business with people who get us, who make us feel that we're a part of it. I was reading something the other day, and I can't remember exactly where it was, and let me paraphrase it. That the two drives we have as human beings are to be included and to be unique. And how do we do that? How do we maintain our identity, our authentic self, and be unique and still find our way into a sense of belonging in an organization? The businesses that find the ways to do that, to allow us each to be our individual self with our word choices, our life experiences, our perspectives, our skill sets, our passions, our superpowers for what we like to do, and who allow other people to be themselves and have civil discourse, have conversations, have differing opinions and differing perspectives, but come together to take the best of what we all are and make organizations that reflect the best of what we all are and serve our communities, making a fair profit, giving back, paying our taxes, giving our community donations, supporting the causes, paying a fair wage, bonuses, giving benefits, those things that we need out there. Those are the things as capitalists, as entrepreneurs, as people who own the businesses that are hiring people, are innovating, and are sharing the success, that we can have a bigger impact that lasts beyond our lifetimes by creating organizations that have embedded in them those social missions, those public benefits, those things that we identify as being equally important with making a profit, and challenging organizations and systems and industries, and political systems even, to look at themselves and to do it differently from the perspective of understanding that two systems, two different ways of letting people interact, isn't separate but equal, doesn't work. We want a level playing field. We want the regulations to apply equally to everyone. We want everyone to pay their share of the taxes. We, as business owners, want to be able to come in and enter an industry and be constrained only by the effort we're willing to put in and the people that we're willing to bring into the project. And different people come and go from your projects and your companies at different stages. The people that spark the initial conversations, the initial startup phase of, you know, the first year, first 6 months even, first year and a half, first 3 years, are likely not going to be the ones that help you grow your business beyond that. Skill sets are different. Interests are different. And we need to understand that. And it's okay for people to come and go from a project. Because people get into a company and you're starting a company and it's not what they thought it was going to be. Or they don't feel like their skill sets are going to be best used there. Or maybe you find out that you've brought someone into your organization and they don't have the skill set that they represented that they do. And so it's okay for those people to be guided out of the organization. It's okay for them to quit and leave no matter what stage it is, and to find the people who do have the skill sets, that do share the perspectives, the values, the ability to learn and engage, and find the right way to move ahead together, creating something that no one's ever seen before. And making sure that it is respectful of everyone's differences and that it gives an opportunity for everyone to have equal access to resources and equal opportunities. But again, businesses are not democracies. So someone in your organization is going to have to wear the captain's hat, the CEO, be the decision maker, and decide which of the opportunities you'll pursue and which opportunities make the most sense for the organization to be successful and to thrive and to keep those commitments of good salaries, benefits, opportunities to advance, giving back to the community, all of those kind of things that make organizations powerful in their impact long beyond the lives of those people who created them. An organization is comprised of its people, and how the leadership and how those people work to come together to create a culture, a purpose, products, services, technology, solutions for the marketplace. That's what makes a difference. That's what makes an impact. And when we frame that in the context of diversity, of inclusion, of equity and belonging, we're going to get more done. We're going to outpace our competition if we do it right, if we do it with respect, if we do it with an ability to learn and adapt, and an ability to listen. Listening, learning leaders are going to drive the next generation and the current generation of businesses and other organizations forward to have an impact. Profit is not evil. Profit means you've exchanged value with people in the marketplace. They valued the product, the service, the technology that you have put in the marketplace and were willing to exchange their hard-earned money for your product or service. And when that comes down to that, just think of what you've done. You've made someone's life better. You've given them a solution to a problem they had. You filled a need. You gave them something that they really, really worked hard for and were able to earn the money to buy it from you. And whether that's something as innovative as a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin or a Tesla car or, you know, you're just your Mini Cooper or the used car that you bought from your uncle. Whatever it is, if it's a book, a pen, a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, a restaurant that we can sit down in and enjoy life
and where we can reconnect with our community. Well, when we do it right, we do it with respect, and we do it with the intent to contribute to our communities, well then, we're focused on the important things. I'm Lee Strickland, and you've been listening to Focus on Business on WCOM FM LP 103.5, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And until next time, everyone, please be safe, be healthy, and be focused on the important things.